listening to listener-supported community radio, KVU FM in Portland.
Sound was used for centuries as a method of torture. Place someone's head inside of a bell and ring it.
Tune in to KVU every other Tuesday at 3 a.m. for the Vinyl Pajama Party with your erstwhile host, Brian.
And eventually, they'll go insane.
You never know what you will find on your radio / interwebs during the show, but it will be something.
They'll go insane. And eventually...
That's the Vinyl Pajama Party, alternating Tuesdays at 3 a.m., only on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
All right. Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today, we're talking with Angela Kim from the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Angela, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. So, Angela, you're a staff person over at the Oregon Justice Resource Center, and I was hoping that today on this episode of Prison Pipeline, we could talk to you a little bit about who you are and what you do, and maybe you could share some of the good work that you're doing and that OJRC is doing.
Yes.
So let's start, first of all, by just getting to know you a little bit. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are, Angela?
Sure. I am a policy associate with the Women's Justice Project here at Oregon Justice Resource Center. I was incarcerated for 17 and a half years. And prior to my incarceration, I was a critical care nurse for over 15 years. And I, during my time of incarceration, I saw a lot of very disturbing things, the way that people were treated in the healthcare through the medical services at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. And I was very shocked by that, because this is the United States of America. And, you know, we like to say that we're first in everything. And I was surprised to see that we treat our citizens in this manner, especially in the field of healthcare, because most healthcare providers, especially in the greater community, you know, healthcare doesn't pay attention to anything except your health. They put blinders on. Regardless of who you are or where you come from or what your background is, they take care of your health. But unfortunately, that wasn't what I was observing during my time of incarceration. And it was very surprising to me. So I saw people dehumanized. I saw people, their healthcare being failed to being taken care of, especially women who have survived so much trauma and have a lot of chronic medical needs. And I went from a person who had been helping people in society to someone who was being denied healthcare. And so it really changed the way that I understood how health, how justice, how those things relate to each other, and really what accountability should look like. If we're sending people to prison, we shouldn't be sending them there to get worse. We should be sending them there to get better in every way. So I really, coming to work here at OJRC, I thought, I really want to focus on healthcare and within that setting, carceral setting, and try to make a difference, and try to take the voices of the women that I worked with and let people hear them.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much, Angela. That's really interesting. A really interesting story. And so there's a lot there to talk about. But before we get to that, can you tell us, what is the Oregon Justice Resource Center?
Yes, the Oregon Justice Resource Center is the only nonprofit law firm in Oregon. And we have many different divisions here at OJRC. We have the Innocence Project of Oregon. We have the Civil Rights Division. We have the Fair Law Project, Immigrant Rights Project, the Youth Justice Project, and our Women's Justice Project.
Yeah, I remember learning about the Oregon Justice Resource Center years ago when they used to host the Women in Prison Conference. That's how I first, that's great. So it's a nonprofit law firm. So is everybody who works there a lawyer?
No, not everyone who works here is a lawyer. Okay. About 30% of the people who work here were formerly incarcerated.
What's the thinking there behind having people who are formerly incarcerated working at a nonprofit law firm?
So people with lived experience have firsthand experience about the things they've gone through. And so they have a different perspective and they can bring a lot into a law firm, especially when you're dealing with people who are incarcerated or have been incarcerated. There are a lot of things that come into play because of the experience that we've all lived through.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's really interesting. What do you do at the Oregon Justice Resource Center?
I'm a policy associate, so I work with the Women's Justice Project to develop different educational offerings that we can go into different facilities and offer education, some background on people who have lived experience.
Oh, great. Can you unpack what that means then? What do you do like for your job?
So recently we had Senate Bill 293 that went to the Oregon legislature, and it was specifically on carceral healthcare and trying to change what carceral healthcare looked like. And I worked on that. And then also we were working on creating a medical in-service that will be educational for healthcare providers who are working with incarcerated people or formerly incarcerated people.
Oh, great. So what happened to the bill that you were working on? Did that get passed?
No, unfortunately, it did not pass. The Oregon Department of Corrections did not submit a fiscal. And so because there was an indeterminate fiscal statement and didn't let the public know how much this could cost them, because this economy is not really super stable, it was a way that the legislature looked at it and said, well, if we don't know how much this is going to cost the state, then maybe we don't want to just say yes. So I'm not giving up. So I think we will look at things and come back and try to do something else. But we do want to focus and try to change carceral health care in a positive way.
So what would it, if the bill had passed, what would it have done for health care for adults in custody in prison in Oregon?
So there were only 4 points to the bill. The first one was that they needed to treat people with pre-existing conditions. Currently, per their policy, they have the option to not do that. The second thing would be that they needed to not take into consideration the remaining length of sentence if they're trying to make a decision on whether to treat someone's medical condition or not. And the third thing was they needed to update their formulary or their prescription medication list so that it was in line with the federal minimum standard, which is Medicaid, Medicare. And then lastly, that if they were going to deny care to someone, that they needed to document why they were denying care.
So, Angela, it sounds like you really put up a good effort to try to get this passed this last legislative session, but it just didn't quite make the hurdles that the legislators were putting before you. What is it going to take in the next legislative session to pass this or a similar type bill?
I'm not quite sure. I do want to publicly thank Senator Patterson. She really took this on and saw that this was a failing in the Department of Corrections, that we need to take care of people's pre-existing conditions and all of the points that were in the bill. I think that hopefully we can get some more healthcare professionals interested and involved. And, you know, we treat people in the public sector with pre-existing conditions. We shouldn't be treating people who are incarcerated with any less than what we treat people out here. So I'm hoping that there, as we do public education and we go into, you know, healthcare facilities and we give them some information and education on this, I think it's one of those areas where it's been a deep, dark secret. And behind the walls, you know, prison walls, people just don't know what goes on. And I think that this is an area that the more we give some public education to, that people will realize that this is not how we want to treat our returning, our citizens, that the majority will be returning to the communities. We don't want this to perpetuate a public health crisis, which is what has been formed.
Can you describe the biggest differences between healthcare in prison and healthcare in the general population?
Yes, one of the very surprising things is when you are in prison and you have a health issue, you're only allowed to bring one issue forward at a visit. So where out here, we're taught to look at the whole body from head to toe because everything comes into play. You can only bring forward one symptom or one complaint in prison when you're going in to see a provider. And this is where really a lot of things can get missed and can turn into something really serious if it's not taken care of.
Have there been any legal cases that have made a major impact on prison healthcare policy in Oregon?
I think there have been a lot of legal cases that have been paid or settled. I don't think it's changed really drastically the prison healthcare. I do know that there have been some changes that were positive. They now have to provide prosthesis to people instead of charging them for their prosthesis.
That's positive, yeah.
Yes.
So when you were working on this issue, obviously you must have heard something from ODOC about this issue. What did ODOC have to say when this most recent legislation was proposed? And what does ODOC have to say more generally about the issue of healthcare in prisons? Do they want more money for healthcare too? Or do they see that it's also an issue?
I know that they have had requested money because they were finally digitizing all of their medical records. They haven't had an electronic health record for years. And so now they're in the process of putting that in place. Interestingly, on this bill, they were silent. They didn't even come to the hearing. So there was no one there and no one spoke up.
Let's talk a little bit more about healthcare for folks who are incarcerated. How are mental health needs addressed or neglected within the prison system?
Interestingly, I ran into this right after I was incarcerated. So I was a victim of domestic violence, and I had been given the understanding prior to going to Coffee Creek that they would have services available there, counseling and things like that. When I got to Coffee Creek, and I would, when you initially go through intake, they put you through the intake process and you see a healthcare provider. And I mentioned that I would like to get into counseling. And I was informed that unless I was willing to go on to medication, that those kinds of services would not be available for me. I didn't feel like I needed to take medication. I wasn't feeling like I was in that kind of a severe situation. And so there was no support, mental health support for me, because I didn't want to take meds.
How are chronic conditions like diabetes, HIV, or hepatitis C managed in prison?
Some people get very good support, and others don't. It's very inconsistent. Interestingly, you would think that going through the process that everyone would be treated with the same care, but that is not what happens in practice. And I'm not sure why that happens. A part of it could possibly be the fact that they don't have an electronic way to check and double check that people have been appropriately seen and taken care of. Things are done on paper, and so pieces of paper can easily get lost and or put into a drawer or just disappear.
Hi, this is Emma. I just wanted to take a minute here to remind you that it is pledge drive season. At this time, it has been a real challenge for everybody at KBOO because we lost our Corporation for Public Broadcasting funding. And so we have to make up for some lost revenue. And you know, I have full confidence and strength that KBOO listeners can do this. You know, KBOO is this amazing resource. It's some of the best programming in town. We've been voted best radio station in the past, and we have all of these loyal listeners. And I just know that if you have a chance, you might consider increasing the amount that you give to KBOO to help make up for the loss of funding that we're getting from, not getting anymore from the CPB. You know, I'm sure that the current administration doesn't want to support anything that we stand for at KBOO, whether that's the rights of people who are incarcerated to healthcare or the rights of transgender people to gender affirming care or reproductive health or ending the genocide in Gaza. I'm pretty sure that everything that KBOO stands for is basically the opposite of what this administration stands for. So what you can consider making a pledge to KBOO today. It's real easy to do. You can just go to kboo.fm/give, and that'll get you started. So again, I hope you will consider supporting your community radio station during this pledge drive season. What about, is there any, I mean, just coming, I know that we're both advocates and this show is about advocacy, so that's really important. But just looking at it from the other side, is there any way to address issues when AICs are abusing the system? I mean, using the issue of needing medical care simply as a way of trying to get attention or sort of a distraction. Does that happen?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is one of the things that they automatically assume about someone who has a legit, could have a legitimate complaint or has a legitimate complaint. It's one of those things that if you work in emergency care or an emergency room, people can get to a point where what they call compassion fatigue. People can have numbing. This is one of the things that healthcare providers have to keep foremost and forefront in their minds. Every single complaint must be treated in the same manner. You cannot come into a situation where you're meeting with a patient and you decide before you've even met them that they're just complaining or they're malingering. That's not a luxury that you have as a healthcare provider. You need to listen to each complaint and do a complete workup. And I think this is where one of the problems of only being allowed to bring one complaint to a visit when you're incarcerated, it doesn't give a full picture of what's going on. So if a person has a pain in their toe and they just keep talking about the pain in their toe, that's all that they focus on. And so you forget that there are the rest of your body is connected to that toe. You really need to do a full system workup. It's not ever appropriate to only focus on one thing. You should always do a complete history on what is going on for someone. And so I think sometimes if someone complains about their pain in their toe, they think, oh, they're just trying to get something over on me, or they're just trying to manipulate the system to get pain medication. And that's not necessarily the case.
What are some of the most common health issues that incarcerated people face?
It's very common after you've been there for some length of time, because the diet is not the healthiest, and because you can't regularly get exercise or sunshine or go outside, that people develop metabolic disorders. Diabetes is a very big one.
What about hepatitis C?
Yes, and people come in with hepatitis. The treatment for the hepatitis can be very taxing on the body. And once again, there's not really good nutrition or support. And so it can make people very ill.
So you may or may not know the answer to this, Angela, but I'm just wondering, what impact does solitary confinement have on a person's physical and mental health?
It can have a huge impact on people's physical and mental health. The environment alone is very detrimental to people's physical health. It's harsh, things are hard, the mattresses are terrible to sleep on for years. People end up with lots of arthritis and debilitating. Even if you just go to the institution and you watch ladies walking down the hall, you'll see the shape of the stools that we sit on has rubbed and causes a pattern to develop on your jeans. And in segregation, because of the isolation, it's very mentally debilitating. There have been lots of studies, and there's a lot of evidence that shows how debilitating this is, which is why the Mandela rules say that, you know, no one should stay isolated like that for more than 15 days. It's just terrible.
In your view, what role should public health departments play in monitoring prison health systems? I mean, is there a role that, you know, outside health departments should they have some sort of oversight role in looking at the standards of care within prisons to make sure that healthcare is being delivered in an adequate and a humane way?
Yes, I think interestingly, in the public sector, for any governing body, over medical departments, over food service, these different governing bodies can come in with no notice and check on systems and make sure that they're running correctly and appropriately. Within Department of Corrections, they have the ability to say no, because of security issues, you can't do a surprise visit. You have to schedule with us. So they have advance notice at all times to be able to rectify any situation or clean things up before they are inspected. I don't think that should be the case. I think that they should still, if there's a governing body and these people have the ability to go in and review and inspect areas, that they should be able to do it with no notice. There shouldn't be given special consideration just because they are a security issue. They can assign an officer to walk around with the person, just like they do when a visit is regularly scheduled. There shouldn't be any reason for them to have advance notice to be able to do things that people in the public sector can't do.
So you may have lived through this. How did COVID-19 maybe expose or worsen gaps in prison healthcare? What was that like?
COVID-19 was horrible for everyone. I do recognize that in the public sector, it was very difficult for people also. But with the carceral setting, we went on lockdowns. It was, things were shuffled around. Things changed from one moment to the next moment. List of rules were posted like every 2 days. It was very chaotic and it was very impossible, absolutely impossible to adequately isolate people who had COVID-19, so everyone was exposed to it. There was no way for them to keep people separate. In a facility like that, the air we breathe is shared by everyone. And because we were on lockdowns and then not allowed to go outdoors, there was no way to keep people from being exposed to it.
Angela, just a couple of questions left. What reforms do you think are most urgently needed right now?
I think that the four things that we asked for in Senate Bill 293 are basic human rights. I think that people, if you have been sentenced to a 36-month sentence in prison, and you go in with a pre-existing condition, the court did not sentence you to death. And so you should not be risking your life to go to prison for 36 months to pay a debt for a crime that you've committed. Your life should not be part of that sentence. So I believe that we really need to treat people the same way that we treat them out here.
Thanks, Angela. And my last question is, what would a truly just and equitable healthcare system look like for folks on the inside?
Honestly, I think that if you're going to be a ward of the state, then the state has a responsibility. You're supposed to be paying your debt to society and being rehabilitated. We should be taking people who come into the carceral setting and releasing them as better viable human citizens returning to the community. So this would be better looked at as an opportunity to improve people's health, improve people's education, make them a better neighbor, because they're going to return. The majority will return to society and be your neighbor. Do you want your neighbor to be broken down and sick and possibly have to have society take care of them? No, you want a neighbor that is engaged and involved and is a viable member of your community.
Thank you. So we've been talking today with Angela Kim from the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Angela, if people would like to learn more about the Oregon Justice Resource Center and its work, or if they'd like to reach out to you, do you have any information that you'd like to share about that?
Yes, we have a fantastic website, ojrc.info, and we have lots of reports on there. There's a way to contact us on there to get involved. We just put up a great little shop so you can wear our t-shirts and sweatshirts and things around too.
Great. Well, thanks so much. We've been talking today with Angela Kim from the Oregon Justice Resource Center about healthcare equity in Oregon's prisons. Angela, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, I'm going to stop.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at